celebrating 25 years on the air. This is Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader.
Notre Dame has defeated Louisville 104-101 in five overtimes.
Run! Brian Stavisky! It's the ball game and the Irish will play for another day!
But to the Notre Dame family, I can't say anything except I've been blessed.
The Penn Kingsman 5A state champs.
I think anytime you have a team with Skylar Diggins at the point, you better not count us out.
The Indianapolis Colts select Quentin Nelson.
Charlie Weiss's tenure as Notre Dame's football coach has come to an end.
South Bend, Washington has etched its name into Hoosier Hysteria history.
Out of the 160 minor league teams, South Bend will be the best.
Brady hits. Demetrius Jackson.
Score, Marshawn! 4-2 Bruins.
Brian Kelly, the new head coach at Notre Dame.
They score! Notre Dame, 3.7 seconds away from a spot in the national championship game.
The Clay Colonials win the state championship. They are living a dream.
Enrique Odunbolawe wins the national championship for Notre Dame.
Here are your hosts, Darren Pritchett and Sean Stiers.
And we welcome you to Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat from 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. Brought to you by our longtime title sponsor, Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds. And by the Food Bank of Northern Indiana. Hunger is a story we can end. Find out how at feedindiana.org. We welcome you to our program. I'm Darren Pritchett with the South Bend Cubs in Appleton, Wisconsin. Final game of a three-game series tonight. 7:50 pregame, 8:05 first pitch on WSBT Radio. South Bend looking to halt a four-game losing streak. Sean Stiers also out of studio today. He is at Notre Dame Stadium as there's going to be a friendly taking place at the house that Rockne built tonight. All the details coming up in just a couple of moments. And coming up, we've got all on the soccer game. We've got Cubs-Padres update, Notre Dame football fall camp series. Houston Griffith is the focus today. Recently, I talked to Phil Steele, who has his own college football magazine preview. He talks all things Irish and some of their opponents in just a little bit. We've got a My Five question of the day, the top five storylines from the first two rounds of the Open Championship at Royal Port Rush. Also coming up later, Sean's America League Power Rankings Rapid Fire. You'll hear from Liverpool's CEO, and that is Peter Moore. And we'll have a little bit more on top of that over the next couple of hours here on Sports Beat, brought to you by Budweiser and the Food Bank of Northern Indiana. Sean, good to be with you, and rarely do you get the chance to be at Notre Dame Stadium in July.
That's exactly right. I don't think either one of us spend much time at Notre Dame Stadium in July, but it's an interesting look. The soccer pitch is all set, and there's some field crew down there kind of giving it some final watering and stuff like that. It looks, as you can imagine, just a lot different in here right now, especially, I mean, the most easily recognizable thing is you've got natural grass back on the field for the first time in, what, five or so years since the football team went to the artificial surface. So it's a different look and getting ready to go here in, what, about 3 hours. They'll be kicking it off, Liverpool FC and Borussia Dortmund in the soccer friendly here, the first ever soccer match at Notre Dame Stadium.
Sean, paint a picture, because I think we've seen, for example, where the Arizona Cardinals play, they have grass that's on like pallets and it just like moves out of the stadium in and out to get sunshine. I know it's not anything like that, but is the grass field up at all, or is it basically just right on top of the field turf?
That, from what I understand, they pulled out the field turf and then they rolled out this grass. Now, that's what I understand that they did. So, yeah, you cannot, there's no noticeable elevation incline by any means. The seams of the grass go all the way over to the walls, the brick walls that encircle the stadium. And it's a lot tighter, too. And I tried to get the exact dimensions of what this grass is, or you know what the field is going to be. Your typical college NFL field is a little bit more than 53 yards from sideline to sideline, whereas soccer, it can vary depending on where you are.
Really?
At FIFA, the FIFA dimensions are typically between 70 and 80 yards, and I asked some of the people here, and they haven't been able to find out the exact width yet, but again, because of the fact that you've got brick walls that aren't going to move anywhere inside Notre Dame Stadium, they did tell me it is just a little bit tighter than what you would usually have, but I couldn't get any quite exact dimensions.
Okay.
But it looks like, just looking from down where they have the sideline stripes, there is probably a little bit less than a 10-yard buffer from the sideline and into those brick walls. And then on the near side of the stadium, where we are in the media press box, they have an artificial black fence that is set up. And they actually have some advertising and that kind of thing on that black fence, mm-hmm. so the people on the other side of the field will be able to see that. But it's kind of a retainer fence that is down there in front of those brick walls and down and into the corner. And then on the far side of the stadium, on the where the old media press box was, that's where the two benches for the two teams are going to be.
Okay.
And they will actually be sitting in the seats of the stadium for those benches. They will not be down on the sideline. Yeah, so that's going to
okay.
be... I haven't been able... There's nothing... Yeah, I thought maybe we would see something marked off, but there's nothing really marked off down there that designates where those benches are going to be. So once it happens, I'll get a photo of it okay. later and kind of tweet it out, and people will be able to see that.
So let me ask this then. Corner kicks. How much room is there in the corners for a player to take a few steps back before kicking from the corner?
It looks like from here, I would guess maybe 4 yards, five at the most, okay. down in the corners. Yeah, that's about all there is. There's not a whole lot of room down there, especially on the near side where they've got that kind of retaining advertisement fence I was talking about. It's a little bit tighter over there than on the far side of the field.
Seems like players take two or three steps, so that should be just fine.
That's true.
So for our radio listeners, paint a picture how close the goals are to the end zone back walls.
Okay, let me see. I would guess it is pretty similar to where the back lines are on the football field, just looking at it. Because there's probably a good 15 to 20 yards from the end line where the nets are set up, and then back to that retaining wall behind it. So it's pretty similar because, again, I believe in soccer – you've got 110 to 120 yards in length. So that would, a football field is 100 yards from end zone to end zone, but then an extra 10 for the width of the end zone. So it looks pretty similar to where the back line of the end zones would be.
Well, this is interesting. I'm not a soccer fan, so I think it's intriguing to me as a non-soccer fan. I mean, I'll watch the World Cup, but I don't watch the MLS and all the things you have on the various sports channels.
Yeah.
So I'm just a very, very casual football fan, I guess we should call it. But it's really funny how this is just an exhibition game that means absolutely nothing, and there's such a buzz about this game taking place. And I do understand it's a legendary team like Liverpool playing in the United States are going to be at Fenway Park on Sunday. But I think for those of us that are fans of American sports, it's kind of hard to imagine an exhibition game with this type of buzz. But I guess it's like the NFL probably going to England would be the best closest comparison.
That's probably true. I'm a little surprised as well, just based on the fact that you have people who are somewhere in our age demographic, maybe a little bit younger, but they're really fired up about this whole thing. I think it is unique because even though soccer has caught on over the last 20 years or so here in the States, and you have the professional leagues and people are into that, I mean, you talk to kids and they've got their favorite UEFA team and their favorite teams from over in Europe, and it does surprise me a little bit, but that's where some of the best teams play, so that's probably a good analogy.
Yeah.
Even though Liverpool's a little bit higher up than the Jacksonville Jaguars when they go to England. So.
Very good. All right, so the game will begin tonight at 7 o'clock, if I'm not mistaken.
8 o'clock Eastern time.
Oh, it is. It is 8 o'clock Eastern time. Okay. Yep. That's what happens when I go to the central time zone. A lot of the websites change to central, and I don't pay attention to that. So it is 8 o'clock at Notre Dame Stadium. Sean, do you know, and I'm sorry I should ask this to you ahead of time, but do you know what time the gates open? I have not read the time.
I am not sure.
That's okay.
I'll see if I can find that while we're talking here.
Well, I do know that fans are encouraged to bring in unopened, sealed water bottles into the stadium. Open bottles of any kind or other drinking containers will not be permitted. This is because of the temperatures. In addition to water for purchase, water filling stations and water fountains will be available throughout the stadium concourse. The Joyce Center will be open at 8:30. Gates 1, 2, and 9 for guests needing access to restrooms and water fountains. And Notre Dame is encouraging drinking plenty of water, wearing a brimmed hat and loose, lightweight, light-colored clothing. When feeling too warm, find a cool, shaded area. And when in the sun, wear sunscreen. Some of the observations from Notre Dame if you're coming to the friendly at Notre Dame Stadium tonight at 8 o'clock. All right, more on the friendly coming up in just a little bit. From their football to our football. The Notre Dame football fall camp series continues on WSBT Radio. Today we're just going to focus on a player, Houston Griffith, sophomore cornerback, leading candidate to be the starting corner opposite of Troy Pride Jr. Last year as a freshman, 11 games, 10 solo tackles, 4 assists, and 2 pass breakups. Some of the audio you're about to hear is from the spring, so keep that in mind. Sometimes the players and coaches are talking about things that happened then, so just fair warning. But here is defensive coordinator Clark Lee from the spring talking about Houston Griffith.
Houston has things that he's really good at as a corner and things that, you know, he's still getting a feel for. You know, part of our, you know, experience in the spring is we go against – you know, a really good quarterback and some really talented receivers. And so I think he's still learning physically, you know, how he presses, how he plays off man, what his transition points need, what, when is that cushion broken, how do I more effectively transition, you know, from a pedal to a turn position. You know, those are the finer points that I think at times, you know, don't always come naturally, that have to be learned. And sometimes as a corner, those are learned by the ball going over your head. And that's part of life. And, you know, we can't, like, for me, you know, for me to yell at Houston for a deep ball is like me being a fan. You know, like, I need to give him the information he can use. And as coaches, we have to give him the information he can use to learn and develop from the snap to snap. But, you know, from a strength and power and speed standpoint, he has it. Certain things, certain techniques we're deploying for him, he does really, really well. He's a great tackler. I mean, he's had some force positions on nub surf, tight end surfaces where he's looked really, really clean and as good as we've had. And I think for him, it's getting comfortable in the techniques and repetition at some of the things that are a little more challenging for him. But the potential is there.
That is defense coordinator Clark Lee talking about Houston Griffith. You might recall he originally committed to Florida State and then flipped to the Fighting Irish, and we are really happy about that. Now from the spring, head coach Brian Kelly on the development of Houston Griffith.
And I think I would answer the question in terms of, you know, from a safety to a corner or a nickel to a corner, you know, Houston's made really good progress. You know, he's being challenged by a really good player in Chase Claypool. So you may look at it and go, wow, you know, we got beat 2 or 3 times today. But I'd like to have that kind of competition going against the kid that is playing corner really in the collegiate level for the first time. He's doing some good things for us. He'll continue to improve. I think that we're going to see a player like Houston continue to grow as it relates to his technique, because physically he's got the tools necessary to play that position.
Sean, I think back to last year, it felt like every other day Houston was playing a new position. He was kind of moved all over the place, nickel, corner, safety. So I think it's going to be just really good for him to settle into being a cornerback. And again, he is the leading candidate to play opposite of Troy Pride Jr. as the Fighting Irish, of course, had Julian Love starring at cornerback last year, and Troy Pride was his sidekick, and now Troy Pride Jr. is kind of the general, and the new sidekick looks like will be Houston Griffith, but playing one position, just focusing on a technique or two at the cornerback position, it does feel like he's going to be more settled, more relaxed, and really ready to become a really good defender, because all signs point toward this kid being an impact player throughout his Notre Dame career.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's a lot to look, and when you listen to both Clark Lee as well as Brian Kelly in those two sound bites, technique came up quite a few times, and just what you're saying, the ability to be at one position and not be bouncing around at different positions, that's going to help just the repetition that he's going to get, because the movements are all different when you're talking about a safety, when you're talking about a nickel, when you're defending the slot, as opposed to now being out on the field more, the shorter side of the field. And that's where Troy Pride Jr. has been the last couple of years, and with Julian Love gone, he flips over to the boundary side now, and Houston Griffith on the field. So again, technique was kind of the buzzword for those two, and he's had some summer to work on some of that stuff, and now he's going to have fall camp before he goes in. He had a solid spring, but I think there's still some room to improve as he continues to refine that technique heading into the season.
Well, that's the perfect tease, because you want to know what he's going to improve on. Well, here was Houston Griffith in the spring being asked about what he looks to improve on.
Just continue to learn the position. You know, it's a new position. Just want to keep on learning the technique, being able to hone it, and just listen to Coach Light, listen to Coach Joseph, listen to Coach Lee and the older guys, and just have fun and just, you know, keep out there, keep working hard and preparing.
Also, Houston was asked back in the spring about the one-on-one drills between receivers and cornerbacks from a media standpoint. It's one of our favorite things to watch when we get to go to practice. And then the seven-on-seven drills as well. How much does that help a developing cornerback? Here is Houston Griffith from the spring.
I feel like as defensive backs, you know, it's one of the hardest positions. So, you know, we just have to see that as a chance to just use our technique, really, and just be able to play out there and just show that, you know, we're not scared of competition or the sideline to sideline, how much space there is, you know. Yeah. Just got to be ready to just compete, really.
Short memory. Got to have a short memory.
That's right.
To play that particular position. Here is Houston Griffith on really leaning on Troy Pride Jr. as he learns the cornerback position.
It definitely is. You know, Troy's a guy who's, ever since day one when I got here, he's always shown me the ropes, and, you know, he's never been afraid to have a conversation with me, so he's always taken me under his.
Now let's hear from Troy Pride Jr., a couple of cuts from him from spring football, and this was Troy discussing Griffith's transition to the cornerback position.
I mean, Houston was All-American in high school, so he already had the tools, patience. He's very good with his hands. He's a very fluid corner. He just, you know, does so many things well that, I mean, like, if you go look at the weight room board, he's at the top. I mean, that's just me, but, like, he's a natural athlete. He's a natural competitor. So, like, yeah, I mean, any, those traits, regardless, are going to make you a good player. And it's obviously made him really good.
It's not one of the... And finally, just a little fun cut as Troy Pride Jr. talks about Houston Griffith's ability to do a little chatting on the field.
Absolutely, yeah, that's my guy now. Houston can he chats it up with me all the time. You know, we got the saying, if you want to stay alive, stay away from 3 and 5. So that's just what we do. So I mean, me and my guy Houston, we're just trying to build. You know, that's really what we're doing.
So, Houston Griffith, leading candidate to be the starting corner. So, Sean, as you go into fall camp, which is the least of your concern, the cornerback spot opposite of Troy Pride or the nickel position, as we hope Sean Crawford is healthy enough to play that position? He would seem to be a guy the coaches have a ton of confidence in, but obviously injuries have held him back. So which spot are you least concerned about, starting corner opposite of Pride or the nickel position?
I would say the starting corner opposite of Troy Pride, which Houston Griffith occupies right now. There was enough that we saw from him in the spring to know that there are some good things. Now, that doesn't mean that he won every one-on-one. It was kind of he had a lot more success early in the spring, and then a little bit later it was a little bit more up and down. But again, I mean, there's enough there to see that the guy has some ability and he can play it. The nickel after the linebacker spot is the biggest probably concern that the team has. And it's not because of Sean Crawford's ability, if that's who ends up there. It's because Crawford now has had multiple injuries. And so the question, one, is can he come back and play even close to the same level he's been able to play at before the injuries? And two, can he stay healthy now? I mean, those are two big questions just because of the track record he's had over the last 3 years.
I think Griffith's going to be fine.
I do, too.
I really do. I think he's going to be okay. I worry about the slot.
Yeah.
The Irish's ability to cover the slot and make big plays in the slot from an offensive standpoint. Just want to see more. Clemson really played with my mind, seeing the great plays they got consistently out of the slot and how difficult they were to defend has me thinking, well, how can Notre Dame be better in both areas this year? Chris Fink is a guy that they're counting on to make some of those plays offensively from the slot.
Clemson did have a really good slot as well. I mean, he was good for the last few years. So, I mean, I think that helped, but I mean, it's still a very valid concern. It was a concern last year, and I think it's a bigger concern this year.
So today's Notre Dame football fall camp series, we focused on sophomore Houston Griffith, leading candidate to be a starting corner opposite of Troy Pride Jr. Sean Steyer's at the University of Notre Dame getting set to take in a friendly between Liverpool and Dortmund tonight. That is an 8 o'clock start. See, I'm not good with soccer. Is that an opening kick? Is that a game starting? What is the official terminology, I wonder?
I'm with you, and I saw it written somewhere yesterday. They said kickoff is at 8, so I'm going with kickoff.
Let's go with it. Hopefully, unlike the Eagles and the Cowboys, there won't be a bounty on the guy kicking off tonight.
There you go.
The game. Hopefully, it's just a nice, clean start. Who was that? Right. Zendejas for the Cowboys?
It was.
Is that who it was, the kicker?
Yep.
The Buddy Ryan era.
Oh, yes.
In Philadelphia. All right, seriously, great to have Liverpool and Dortmund in town for this friendly at Notre Dame Stadium. When we come back, a conversation with Phil Steele, who has done a great job through the years putting together his college football preview magazine. His analysis is terrific. And I had the chance to talk to Phil before this road trip, so we're going to play back that conversation. In a moment, you'll learn his thoughts on the Irish and also some of the opponents on the Notre Dame schedule. That college football conversation is coming up next. It is now 5:28 at 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader.
Hi, this is Dan Patrick, and you're listening to South Bend's number one sports talk show, Weekday Sports Beat on 96.1 WSBT.
Phil Steele puts together the most comprehensive college football season preview magazine each and every year, and the new installment is ready for you to enjoy. And right now, Phil joins us on WSBT Radio in South Bend. Phil, great to be with you. How are you?
I am doing great, Darren. How about yourself today?
We're looking forward to the college football season. We've had a cool summer, so it almost feels like college football weather around here. But, Phil, I'll tell you what, you were very high on the Fighting Irish last year, and Brian Kelly's team made it to the college football playoff. Did the results of the season line up to your preseason expectations?
They sure did. And, you know, you go back 2 years ago where I had Notre Dame, my most improved team in the country, and they went from a losing record to a great season. And then last year, my number one surprise team in the country, which is a non-top 10 team that I think can make the playoff, Notre Dame made the playoff. So they're making me look good. Love these Fighting Irish.
When you think about Clemson and Alabama field the last few years, their ability to control the line of scrimmage has really set the table for them to win national championships. Brian Kelly has put a lot of emphasis on getting the offensive line and defensive line much better, recruiting, developing. Where do you feel like they stand right now coming into the 2019 season?
I've got them rated strong in both areas. You look at the offensive line coming back this year, good portion of the players coming back from last season. I actually rated the number 8 offensive line in the country coming in. Got to figure out the center position probably. Is probably the biggest question on the offensive line, but I think they'll get that figured out. And defensive line-wise, while they lose a couple of big-time guys like Jerry Tiller out the door, I like this D-line and rate it number 11 in the country. So you're talking top 11 for both the offensive and defensive lines, and that's a great place to start for any team.
Phil, is there any part of this year's Fighting Irish football team that you need to see in action and they need to have some early success before you put the Irish into that playoff contender category?
I'm probably the biggest question mark might be at the linebacker and special teams. You know, they lose Tranquil from the linebacker spot and maybe cornerback as well, because as we saw in the game against Clemson in the playoff, when Julian Love went out, Notre Dame's pass defense got a little suspect. So those are probably the three areas that I have the biggest question marks on. But overall, I think this year's team clearly could be just as good as last year's team.
Phil Steele joining us here on WSBT Radio. At the start of last year, we were expecting Brandon Wimbush to make a big jump in his ability to throw the football. It did not take place. Ian Book took over for the Wake Forest game and helped the Irish get to the playoff. What is your scouting report on Ian Book, and how good do you think he can be?
You know, I think he can be one of the top quarterbacks in the country. He's a vocal leader. He throws the ball extremely well. And the thing that impressed me the most watching the Notre Dame games last year is probably his pocket presence. He really feels the pass rush extremely well, knows when to get rid of the football, and can read the defense as well. So I think he can be a complete quarterback. He's got the tools that you want out of a QB, and he has all the intangibles.
Chase Claypool's been a very interesting player ever since he arrived from Canada. When he came to campus, I think the coaching staff, they were fighting over where they wanted him to play. Everybody kind of wanted him at their position. He started as a special teams player as a freshman. Of course, he's a wide receiver and played second fiddle to Miles Boykin last year. Boykin now with the Baltimore Ravens. How good do you think Claypool can be, and can he be a go-to guy for Ian Book?
Yeah, Chase Claypool will be the go-to guy, I feel, this year for the Notre Dame Fighting Irish. And when you look at Claypool, you know, he's a freakish type of athlete. He's a guy that can go up there and get that 50-50 ball. He's got great speed. He's got upper body strength. He's quick. He adjusts the ball well. I think he's going to have himself a big-time year. You don't get that type of combination of size and speed together very often. And I think Chase Claypool is going to take advantage of it and have a big year.
Going back to the defensive side of the football just for a second, Phil, I know there's a lot of folks on the Notre Dame staff that feel like Julian Okorah could have that breakout season, which could lead to him being a number one NFL draft pick next spring. A lot of quarterback hurries last year, not as many sacks as the coaching staff would have liked, but is he set up for a big year as a part of this Fighting Irish defensive line?
Yeah, absolutely. He comes into the year my number 9 rated defensive end for the NFL draft, but I think he can clearly move up the board. And as you touched on, you know, 8 sacks last year can get a lot more this season. And I think it helps having a guy like Kareem on the other side of the ball to take some of the pressure off. So you get the 2 really good defensive ends out there. But I think Okorah is a guy that can have a big year and move up the draft boards.
Phil Steele, our guest here on WSBT Radio, talking about the Fighting Irish. Phil Steele's 2019 college football preview available. We'll tell you all about that coming up in just a second. I want you to touch on a couple of teams on the Irish schedule. And, of course, the game in Athens against the Georgia Bulldogs September 21st will be highly anticipated. Kirby Smart's team just missed the playoffs last year, maybe a special teams blunder away from making the playoff. Is Georgia going to be the real deal this year? Most people have them in the top 5 in the country in their preseason rankings.
Yeah, I think when you look at Georgia, they're a stronger team than they were last year. We start with the quarterback, Jake Fromm, is back, and I expect him to have his best year. And he didn't have a bad year last year, 30 touchdown passes, just 6 interceptions. DeAndre Swift is a guy who ran for 1,000 yards, but you expected a little bit more out of him. He only had 5 starts last year. I think Swift can really emerge. The receiving core looks solid. They had a guy like Demetrius Robinson, who I think will get more out of the slot. And the offensive line – irate number two in the country. Very nearly came to vote number one. I'm on the Joe Moore Award Committee, and we had Georgia up there in the top three offensive lines last year, and they're up there again this year. And defensively, a little more experience than they were coming into last year. Like Notre Dame, their biggest question mark might be at the linebacking core, but overall, they're solid defensive line DBs. So this is a Georgia team that is even better than last year, and they're probably going to be favored in all their games. I can tell you right now in Vegas, the early number on that game, Georgia, a 9.5-point favorite against the Irish.
Wow. Phil, a team that seems to be all over the place in terms of preseason analysis, and that's the Michigan Wolverines. The Irish will go to Ann Arbor October the 26th. I've seen them ranked as a number three team. I've seen them ranked as an overrated team. Where do you stand on the Wolverines and Jim Harbaugh trying to get it done there in Ann Arbor?
You know, watching Michigan most of the year last year, I was very impressed with the team. Offensively, defensively, special teams, complete team. And I really thought heading into that Ohio State game, they were one of the best teams in the country. And then those final two games of the year happened. Michigan got crushed by Ohio State, 62-39, and then rolled by Florida in the bowl game, 41-15. And I think that lowered their expectations a little bit. I'm one of those guys that's very high on Michigan this year. I think when you look at their defense, while they lose some talented players, I'll take you back 2 years. 2017, they had a grand total of one returning starter on defense, yet Don Brown's defense allowed just 18.8 points per game. And offensively, I like the addition of Josh Gattis, the co-offensive coordinator from Alabama coming in. He's switching them to a spread offense this year, and that's perfect for Shea Patterson. They've got the talent at receiver. You're looking at guys like Nico Collins, Donovan Peoples-Jones, and then Tariq Black, who missed all of last year. Once again, we're looking at a team that's solid on the offensive line. I rate them number four in the country in that unit, and solid on special teams. I think when you look at Michigan's schedule, the fact that they get Michigan State, Notre Dame, Ohio State, their three toughest foes all at home, is a big-time plus for them, and I think they have a shot of making the playoff.
Is there enough talent at USC to be a Pac-12 contender?
Yes, there is. And I think the biggest improvement you're going to see out of USC is in JT Daniels, their young quarterback. Now, remember last year, Daniels came in as a true freshman, a highly rated true freshman, but he played like a true frosh at times. Only had, I think, something like a 14-10 ratio. It wasn't overwhelming last year. And now you look at JT Daniels, he's got a year of experience, and he's throwing to a tremendous set of receivers. Amaron St. Brown, Tyler Vaughns, Michael Pittman, all potential high NFL draft picks. The offensive line should be good. And defensively, Clancy Pendergast has simplified the defense a little bit. I think that's going to help them. They do have talent throughout. I believe there'll be a player in the Pac-12 this year, but they do play one of the tougher schedules in the country. I rate it number three in the country, and I've got them an underdog when they face Notre Dame.
Phil, one more team, Stanford. I'm a big fan of KJ Costello at quarterback. Will this be a season where David Shaw brings the Cardinal back? A rare down year last year for Stanford.
Yeah, and it's unusual for Stanford. They've been known for tight ends, running game, and sometimes they'll play three or four tight ends at a time. So they're not just looking at 12 personnel. Sometimes they're playing 13 personnel. But Stanford's going to go to more of the pass attack. They had success with KJ Costello last year. Now they do lose their Sega Whiteside, and they lose Irwin, and they lose Smith, their top three receivers from last year. They're going to have to get more out of the run game. But is David Shaw still the head coach? The answer is yes. So despite the fact they have nine returning starters, Stanford's going to be a contender in the Pac-12. And here's an interesting thing as far as the Pac-12 race goes for them. They get Washington at home, and they get Oregon at home. So if they could take care of business at home, they could very well be in that Pac-12 title game.
Okay, Phil, we have Irish fans that tune in to our stream all around the world. They want to know about this Fighting Irish football team. What do you believe should be realistic expectations for the 2019 Fighting Irish?
Well, clearly double-digit wins, I think, are expected. And, coming into the season, Notre Dame will be an underdog in just two games all year. At Georgia, at Michigan, and those are going to be the big tests. And if Notre Dame could pull an upset there, those are two quality teams, two teams I project to make the playoffs, then it could be a season beyond my expectations. I did not actually call for Notre Dame to make the playoff this year. I do have my dog in those two games, so I'm looking at about 10-2 for the Irish this year, but I'll be eagerly watching that game in Athens on September the 21st.
Phil, tell everybody about your magazine, how it's available, and I know it's also available on the digital route right now. You can watch the or take a look at the magazine on your iPad.
That's right. Appreciate that, Darren. It'll be hitting the newsstands, and it'll probably be at some places this weekend. Barnes & Noble, Walmart, Books A Million, CVS, Target, Walgreens. 352 pages, and not a lot of big pictures or ad space, a lot of small type. We give you 3 to 4 times the amount of information in any other magazine. Just pick up a copy at the newsstand, or like you said, you can actually download it tonight to your iPhone, to your Android device, Kindle, even your home computer. Just go to philsteele.com. That's STEELE.com. When you go there, upper left-hand corner, click on Digital Magazines. And when you click there, you can download it to any of those 4 devices, and then you'll get it on all the other ones as well. So that's Digital Magazines, philsteele.com. And if you want to make sure you get the Phil Steele magazine with the Notre Dame Fighting Irish player on it, just go to philsteele.com and order it that way, and we'll send it out to your priority mail today.
Phil, thanks for all the great work you do getting all of us college football fans ready for the season, and we greatly appreciate your time joining us here in South Bend.
Hey, a lot of fun as always, Darren. Thanks for having me on today.
Thank you so much for your time.
That is Phil Steele. Check out his magazine. It's available right now. In fact, if you want to get ready for the season, get your Indy Insider Notre Dame Football Annual, Phil Steele's magazine. You are set for the opening weekend of the college football season. It is now 5:43. Sean Steyer's at Notre Dame Stadium. The friendly between Liverpool and Dortmund is tonight at 8 o'clock. I'm Darren Pritchett with the South Bend Cubs. They will visit Wisconsin tonight at 8:05 on WSBT Radio. The My 5 question of the day centers around the Open Championship at Royal Portrush. We'll give you the question and the answers next on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader.
One question, 5 answers. This is the My 5 question of the day on Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT.
All right, Sean, do you want to do the honors today asking the question?
Sure thing. The My 5 question of the day centers around the Open Championship going on across the pond. The top 5 storylines from the first 2 rounds of the Open Championship at Royal Portrush. Darren, number 5.
All right, we're going to start with Roy McIlroy from Northern Ireland. He has been the face of this championship leading up to it getting underway. In fact, as a 16-year-old, he set the course record at Royal Portrush with a 61. Ridiculous. So there was a lot of people focusing on Rory to win this championship. He was the betting favorite. And what happens on a course he's played so many times? First hole of the tournament, a quadruple bogey. He ends up shooting an 8-over par 79 on Thursday. Came back today and shot 65 and missed the cut by 1 shot. He almost pulled it off. So McIlroy was a centerpiece of this championship, one of the reasons why the tournament is there for the first time since 1951. But Rory, that quad on number 1 sets him back.
Tough luck for Rory McIlroy. Number 4.
Going to go with Brooks Koepka, Mr. Major. 4 major championship wins in the last 2 years. He is in position once again to win a 5th major. He sits at 5 under par. He shot 68 and 69. So he is right there, just 3 off the pace going into the weekend. So Koepka, who looks like he is so comfortable going after majors, he's got another chance and an opportunity to win his first Open Championship and make it now 5 majors if he can pull it off.
Looking at Darren's top 5 storylines from the first 2 rounds of the Open at Royal Portrush, number 3.
Well, I never thought this guy's name would pop up during the championship, but there's a reason why it has. Lee Westwood. He is now playing in his 82nd major championship. He has never won a major. He's 46 years old, 24 European Tour title wins. He finished 2nd in the Masters and the Open Championship. He finished 3rd in the PGA and the U.S. Open in his career. So he's had a lot of near misses. He has spent 160 weeks in the top 10 of the world golf rankings. One of those guys that has done everything but win a major championship. He's had a lot of close calls, never got it done, and now he sits at minus 7 through 2 rounds. He is 1 shot out of the lead. So Westwood, a very popular European player. We've had to go up against him in Ryder Cups in the past. in position to kind of stun everybody and win his first major. And as you know, those newspapers over there in England, they love to focus on things maybe not necessarily as important as the championship. And there's a lot of buzz over there because he recently got divorced and has a new girlfriend, and they were kissing at the end of rounds, and there was a lot of excitement in the tabloids and in the crowd. So Koepka doesn't kiss his girlfriend,
right?
That makes headlines.
Exactly.
Westwood kisses his, and he gets headlines. So I guess no matter what, if you get your girlfriend around as a golfer, you're going to make headlines whether you kiss her or not.
Number
important
two.
Stuff.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly.
You know, number two is Shane Lowry, an Irishman trying to win the Open Championship in Northern Ireland. He won the Irish Open back in 2009 as an amateur. A guy that has never won a major, trying to win a major that would be something very close to his heart as an Irishman trying to win in Northern Ireland. He looked very shaky at the end of his round today, hit some awkward shots. He basically dubbed his second shot into the par 4 18th. So Lowry, a little stumbly coming down the stretch. You could hear the fans get behind him. They want a local to win the Open Championship. So their three main guys, McDowell, Clark, and McIlroy, not making the cut. It looks like all the focus is going to go to Lowry, and let's see how he handles that. It's not something he's used to having the spotlight on him, so this could be a tough task for him.
All right, Darren's top five storylines from the first two rounds of the Open Championship at Royal Portrush. Number five, Rory McIlroy. Number four, Brooks Koepka. Number three, Lee Westwood. Number two, Shane Lowry. And the number one is
J.B. Holmes. He's been quiet for a while. Really good tour player from the United States. He's got a great story. How many people in their younger days lettered in the same sport 10 times? Because normally the most you can get is four, right? Freshman,
yeah, no
sophomore,
kidding.
Junior, senior. Well, J.B. was a little different down in the state of Kentucky. He made his varsity high school golf team in third grade. Third!
Oh, my gosh.
He lettered 10 times in golf at his high school, which is crazy. And he's looking for his first major championship. They told the story on the coverage today. He'd been struggling with his game, so he went to the Dominican to go play in the wind. Like we all do when we struggle. We all go to the Dominican, too, just to go find our golf game. This is nothing out of the ordinary. But he hasn't played well recently. He's in contention right now. He handled the overnight lead very well, played a good solid round today. So Holmes and Lowry tied for the lead going into the third round tomorrow at Royal Portrush. So J.B. Holmes looking to pick up his first major and give another major championship to the United States.
I had never heard that about J.B. Holmes. That's a fascinating story.
I had not either. That's crazy. I mean, can you imagine as a third grader playing?
No.
A high school sport. Now, golf is one you can actually do. It's not like you can go play football or basketball or baseball for that matter. Maybe you can do tennis or golf or bowling or something like that. But major sports, no. But still, quite impressive to be third grade on the high school golf team. If you had a match against him, you think, oh, I'm going to crush this guy. I mean, look how little he is.
That's right.
And then, boom. He hits his drive. So that is the My Five question of the day. It is 5:53 at WSBT. A look back at the Chicago Cubs' victory over San Diego this afternoon. Sean will have more from Notre Dame Stadium. The friendly coming up in about 2 hours. More coming up on Sports Beat on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. Sean Stiers from Notre Dame Stadium. The friendly. Dortmund and Liverpool at 8 o'clock tonight. I'm Darren Pritchett with the South Bend Cubs. It's the Cubs and the Timber Rattlers. 8:05 first pitch, 7:50 pregame on 96.1 WSBT. More from Sean on the friendly in just a couple of moments. Right now, to America's game. The game of baseball where the Chicago Cubs report takes place right now. The Chicago Cubs idled yesterday. And Chicago just pulled out a 6-5 win over San Diego at Wrigley Field a few moments ago. The Cubs were down 3-0 in this contest with John Lester on the mound. That's when Anthony Rizzo connected on a grand slam in the fourth inning. The Cubs took a 4-3 lead. The Padres tied it in the fifth. And then the Cubs were able to retake the lead in the bottom of the fifth inning as Javier Baez homered for Chicago, his 23rd of the year. And so the Cubs had their one-run lead back. But then in the bottom of the eighth inning, the first pitch thrown by Pedro Strop was hit out of the ballpark by Naylor to tie the game at 5. And then a bizarre way to take the lead in the bottom of the eighth inning. With the bases loaded, one out, David Bote hit a ground ball to third. The throw home for the force out for the second out. Francisco Mejia decided to fire the ball to first base, going for the double play. He shouldn't have thrown it. The runner, Bote, was going to be safe, but he threw low. The ball didn't hit the dirt, but it looked like Eric Hosmer, the Padre first baseman, took his eye off of it as he reached down and missed the ball. It rolled behind him, and the Cubs were able to score the go-ahead run as Addison Russell crossed home plate. That gave the Cubs a 6-5 lead. Craig Kimbrell got the save, his fifth with Chicago, as he gave up just a walk with three strikeouts in the ninth inning. And the Cubs figure out a way to get it done, 6-5 the final. And the Cubs really got away with one of the eighth inning. Runner at first base, one on a pop-out into shallow left. Javier Baez went and caught it. But then he just kind of nonchalantly from the outfield threw it to the pitcher, Strop, and he threw it over his head, and the runner advanced from first to second. Those are the type of lackadaisical, sloppy plays that management has been talking about that the Cubs have to clean up. And Baez just was a little lazy. I don't think it was hot-dogging. It was just being lazy, not running the ball into the infield. He threw from the outfield grass to the pitcher near the pitcher's mound, and he overshot Pedro, and that allowed a runner to move up. Now, that runner did not score, so it didn't matter, but I think Cubs management just kind of saying those are the things we have to stop doing. And the Cubs got away with it today as they ended up winning over the Padres by a score of 6-5. And so Strop, who had the blown save, ends up with the victory today. He is now 2-3. So the Padres have been playing pretty well. Ran into trouble in their last series, but the Cubs at home right now taking care of business. If they can play half this good on the road, they should be in really good shape in the National League Central. Wrigley Field has been definitely the friendly confines for them this year.
Yeah, definitely getting better. We talked about their sub-500 record away from home before the All-Star break, and they've been fortunate to have these games at home to start off the second half of the season. They'll be hitting the road here pretty soon. Not a great start for John Lester, and he's just kind of been weird starts. He gave up 12 hits today, and it's his fourth consecutive start where he has allowed at least three runs in fewer than seven innings. So they managed to get the win. And Craig Kimbrell starting to put together some saves as well. So that is good news for them. And they win. So that's even better news.
Yep, Cubs 2.5 over Milwaukee, 3 over St. Louis. Top of the hour, WSB.
Celebrating 25 years on the air. This is Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader.
Notre Dame is moving on to the Elite Eight. Taylor, he stopped. Notre Dame wins.
Lick Leitner and Smallbone have been the catalysts for South Bend St. Joseph's.
Jalen Smith verbally committed to play football at Notre Dame.
And Notre Dame is going to Omaha for the first time since 1957.
Rebound, run the ball, middle. Score! The Irish are going to the championship game!
Congratulations, Tom, on the championship.
Thank you. We brought one back to South Bend finally.
Ryan Newman, Roger Penske win the Daytona 500.
Leitner going to try to sneak it ahead. Touchdown, SC!
Can't express how sorry I am towards Matt Tye.
And the White Sox have won the World Series.
I don't pay a damn bit of attention to what people on the outside say, because I understand none of them, though.
York now, in front, Ogilvie, they score! They score! Notre Dame to the Frozen Four!
The Colts of Indianapolis win Super Bowl 41.
The Fighting Irish are national champions in 2001. Notre Dame! Notre Dame! Notre Dame is the national champion!
Is that the play that will seal the playoff bid for Fighting Irish?
Here are your hosts, Darren Pritchett and Sean Stiers.
Another hour of Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat presented by our title sponsor, Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds. And we're also presented by the Food Bank of Northern Indiana. Hunger is a story we can end. Find out how at feedindiana.org. I'm Darren Pritchett with the South Bend Cubs in Appleton, Wisconsin. South Bend visits the Wisconsin Timber Rattlers at 8:05 South Bend time tonight. Pregame at 7:50. Sean Stiers at a unique event at Notre Dame Stadium for the first time. Notre Dame Stadium is a pitch as they get set for a soccer friendly between Liverpool and Dortmund. And that kickoff is set for 8 o'clock tonight at Notre Dame Stadium. And Sean Stiers is in the press box at Notre Dame Stadium hosting his portion of Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat. So give us a little scene setter. What are you looking at right now at Notre Dame Stadium?
Well, I do see some fans starting to trickle into the stadium here. So the gates are open. I'm not sure exactly what they were hoping to see 2 hours before the friendly starts, staring into the sun. That's the hard part is, man, it is warm out here. We're lucky up on top of the stadium. I just went out on one of the patios here on the ninth level of the stadium, and there's a pretty good wind that's blowing out there, so it's a little bit cooler up here. But I did peek out from that patio area down in the parking lot, and there's some tailgating going on. You know, not quite as full as it would be for a home football game, but they've got the, since Liverpool is hosting this event here, right down in the area between Notre Dame Stadium on the south side of the stadium, between the stadium and Purcell Pavilion, they've got a stage set up, and there are some, looks like some English performers kind of singing and dancing and stuff like that. And there's a big throng of probably 200 or 300 different Liverpool fans with their red T-shirts on out there. Mm. And then just across, like if you scan, like if you're looking to the south, if you scan to the east a little bit on the backside of where the video board is at Notre Dame Stadium, down in the parking lot there, Borussia Dortmund's colors are yellow, and there's a pretty good throng of probably 50 or 60 Dortmund fans doing their tailgate. So there are tailgaters out there for the soccer match here tonight. And one thing that I also found out just between segments there at the top of the hour is apparently Liverpool is going to be without three of its best players for this match tonight. Two forwards and their goalie are both playing in other international events. Three total players, three forward. Okay, so it's four total players, three forwards, and a goalie will not be here tonight. So it sounds like Borussia Dortmund, even though Liverpool is the defending UEFA League champion, it sounds like Borussia Dortmund is going to have probably the stronger squad here tonight, just based on the fact that those pretty high caliber players are all not going to be here tonight.
And that is what makes soccer so different than the American sports. You are a baseball player, you're a football player for your team. Outside of representing your country in an international event, there's just not, you're not ever going to see anything like that happen.
Yeah.
Like when the NHL had their players in the Olympics, they shut down the NHL.
That's right.
So those players could take part in the Olympics and there would not be unfair matchups in the NHL. So just the fact that some of these players are going to be playing for different teams throughout the year, it kind of leads to these situations to unfold. So four of their key players not playing. See, again, it's a friendly, and that's why I just have a hard time wrapping my head around the extra excitement for an exhibition game. But I do understand two teams that are never going to be in this part of the country very often, and there are a lot of soccer fans who root for Liverpool across the country, so I do kind of get it, but it's just kind of unfortunate you don't get to see the real team. That would be like the Yankees going on an exhibition tour in Japan, and no Aaron Judge, and no Giancarlo Stanton, and no Gary Sanchez.
Exactly.
It would take away some of the flavor, but I would assume for most Liverpool fans in this area or in the Midwest that are coming to this game, they're just going to be excited to see their team play, even though some guys aren't going to play. I think this is kind of one of those once-in-a-lifetime opportunities for many, many people.
Absolutely. Still the first-ever soccer match here at Notre Dame Stadium, and the fact that you have a brand name like Liverpool coming in here, I think that's still a pretty big excitement level for a lot of local fans who have never got to see something like this here before, especially in a community this size.
I don't know if those guys are going to be available for their friendly Sunday, because Liverpool's going to play again at Fenway Park.
Yeah.
They're not playing Dortmund. They're playing somebody else. So with the heat and playing tonight, and then you got to fly to Boston either later tonight or in the morning, and then you play again on Sunday with a roster that may not be full. It might be an interesting couple of days. But again, it's just an exhibition, Matt, so in the whole scheme of things, it's not that big a deal. But I would have to think that's a pretty good challenge, only one day off in between matches with a limited roster.
I agree, because with it, just what you said, I mean, it's hot here. It's still going to be hot on the East Coast. They play Sunday, as you said, at Fenway Park, and then I think it is Wednesday they'll be at Yankee Stadium. So that's three pretty quick matches. Yeah, I haven't heard if any of those players will rejoin them before Boston or New York. But, you with the heat the way it is, you would think that you would want to have a lot of guys to kind of supplement it.
That's as far as my soccer analysis will go.
Yep, me too.
That's all I got. I remember there was a movie, and I can't think of the name of it, but part of the movie centered around a trip to Europe, and they ran into the Liverpool fans who were pretty excitable, known as the Reds.
I don't think I saw that. They are the Reds. I do.
Euro Trip. I think it was Euro Trip. It has some interesting scenes, not for youngsters, but the Liverpool fans were in it, and they were a little rowdy, to say the least, in that particular movie. Okay, let's get to the old American pastime. Yesterday, I took care of the National League Power Rankings for this week. Ho-hum, just like every week, the Dodgers are number one.
Yep.
So now we go to the America League tonight. Sean will rank the top six in the America League. We will go 6-1, and we will start with team number six.
Well, I'll say first of all that my power rankings have not changed from this week to last. And this is one of the few times that there has been no change at all in the rankings this season. But I start with the Cleveland Indians. They went into the All-Star break riding a six-game winning streak, and they're currently on a run of five straight wins. But here's the problem for them. They started the second half by losing two out of three to the Twins, and their most recent wins are over the Tigers. That's not really saying much, but that's kind of what the Central Division is. You've got a couple contenders and a bunch of bad teams, and even the White Sox are starting to fall back now since the break. But the Indians play their next 10 games against the Royals and Blue Jays. They have two series against the Royals with a series against the Blue Jays in between before they close out July in Houston. So the competition might not be all that great, but that's going to give them a really good chance to continue to gain some ground on the Minnesota Twins.
Corey Kluber started throwing this week. He has not pitched in a couple of months since breaking his forearm. So some help on the way for the Tribe as they try to track down the Minnesota Twins. Okay, now to team number five in your American League power rankings.
The Oakland A's. If the postseason started today, it would be the Indians hosting the wild card game against either the A's or Tampa Bay. They're in a tie right now for that number two wild card spot. Oakland won its first five games coming out of the break before they dropped the first game of an important four-game set in Minnesota yesterday, and they'll continue three more games over the weekend. They follow that series with three games in Houston, so much tougher sledding for the A's than, for example, the Indians within the next week.
Okay, so Oakland kind of sneaking back into this playoff picture. They just kind of quietly go about their business.
They do.
Out in Oakland. So we're going through the American League power rankings for Sean for this week, team number four.
At number four, I have the Tampa Bay Rays. They're, as I said, in a dead heat with the surging A's in the wild card standings. They're eight behind the Yankees, two ahead of the Red Sox in the AL East. And the schedule hasn't been kind to Tampa over the last couple of weeks either. They split four games against the Yankees going into the All-Star break. Then they took three of four from Baltimore and then just got done losing three out of four in New York to the Yankees again. So that is eight of their last 12 games against the team with the second-best record in baseball. So it's been tough, but I don't think they're any worse. So, again, when you look at that wild card spot right now, the fact that they're in a dead heat with Oakland right now, it's not necessarily indicative of who they are because it's just been a really rough stretch for them these last couple weeks.
Well, White Sox fans will get a look at a guy that the South Bend Cubs had a chance to see a couple of times in 2018, and that would be Brennan McKay. He is one of those hitter pitchers that Tampa Bay took with the number 2 overall selection out of the University of Louisville. And we only saw him as a pitcher once, and it was for 2 innings. And this guy's motion is so fluid and so relaxed, but the ball comes out of his hand like it's shot out of a bazooka. And his fastball is 96-97 with great breaking ball stuff. He's a left-hander, and McKay is going to start for the Rays tonight. And so this is a fun guy to watch. I'm not sure how much he's going to hit in the majors. He did not hit as well as he did as a pitcher. To me, and we've had this conversation a couple of times on South Bend Cubs baseball games, if I have an ace in the making, I don't know if I mess with him hitting. He is a guy that could be a number one starter for Tampa for as long as they can keep him. And I don't know if I worry about the hitting part. Is that really that necessary? Now, if he's a number 3 or 4 starter, okay, maybe we have the conversation, but there just aren't many aces, and I'm not saying he's one yet. But I don't know if I even mess with the hitting if I've got a guy that can be that good as a starting pitcher.
That's a good point. I do like the intrigue of a guy playing both ways because we haven't seen it in so long in Major League Baseball. And the guy that we're talking about, Brendan McKay, is just so fundamentally sound, as you described, doing both. I mean, the form, the technique. From a pure fun baseball fan standpoint, I sure liked to see a guy have the opportunity to do both, but I agree with the case that you're making there as well. When you've got that kind of investment in a guy who has a chance to be a number one type starter at the major league level, is it worth it for him to be out there swinging the bat every day as well?
Let me just give you a couple of numbers. McKay was with Bowling Green for 21 games in 2018, .254 average, .484 on base. He went to Advanced A and had, 119 at-bats, hit .210 with a .317 with 5 home runs. This year in Double-A in the Southern League, hit .167 with a .256 on-base percentage, no home runs, 8 RBI, but he went to Triple-A Durham and hit .269 in 52 at-bats with a .397 on base, 4 homers, 10 RBI. So far in his minor league career, 447 at-bats, .217 the average, .347 the on-base. He's walked 82 times in 131 games. He has 14 homers and 79 RBI. So a lot of hit and miss so far as a hitter, but how much time does he really get to spend on that? That's a part of the intrigue of having a dual player. Can you be good at two things, playing the game at the highest level?
Yep. I agree.
I'm not sure. Okay, sorry. Here's number 3 on your list.
No, that's okay. I definitely think it's an intriguing question to be asking, and he's going to kind of be an experiment for a lot of these guys going forward. Number 3 on my list, the Twins, the Minnesota Twins, they snapped a 3-game losing streak by downing Oakland last night, and their 2 most recent losses came against the lowly New York Mets, and they're just 4 ahead of the Indians in the Central Division with 3 games left against the A's this weekend. Offense has carried them all season. They're still the top home run hitting team in baseball, but I think they really need to add an arm or two if they're going to stay afloat and hold off the Indians, because Cleveland has gained a lot of ground on them. With Cleveland, it was the other way around. Cleveland's pitching was carrying them. The offense took forever, and now the offense has finally woken up. For Minnesota, it's been the hitting that's carried them, and that bullpen has carried them so much this year, but they gave up 12 runs to the Mets the other day. Their only starter with a sub-4 ERA is Jose Berrios, and he's allowed 12 runs in his last 17 and a third innings in his last 3 starts. I just really think they've got to go out and get another arm. Otherwise, they're in danger with what they've done. They've had such a great first half. Yep. They're in danger of just getting swallowed up by the Indians in the near future.
And I wonder, Sean, to build on your comments, the fact that they're a small market team, when you have that opportunity to win, it almost feels like you need to jump on it.
Gotta
and
do
you hate
something.
To mortgage some of your future. But the opportunities are so few and far in between that it feels like this is an opportunity to really get something done this year. You know, Cleveland's going to be okay moving forward. We'll have to see when Lindor and Ramirez become free agents, how they replace them, assuming they can't sign them, and what they do with Kluber and Bauer. They got a lot of things to sort out there. But the White Sox, we think, are coming. And the White Sox, Luis Robert is absolutely destroying the ball at AAA. I think he's had two multi-home run games in the last week at AAA. So he's going to be joining Eloy Jimenez in the outfield. And the White Sox appear to be on the verge of something really special. So if you're Minnesota, I don't know if you can really worry about all those things at this point, but this is an opportunity to win, and I'm not saying they mortgage everybody in their minor league system, but this just feels like a go year, and they probably do need to tack on to Odorizzi and Berrios in the rotation.
No, and I completely agree, and that's part of why I think it's a little baffling, for example, that Milwaukee has not been more aggressive the last couple years trying to go out and make midseason trades to really be legitimate when it comes time to the postseason. And that's the one thing as a Royals fan, even though I've been critical at times of maybe the overall way that the Royals have drafted and kind of the way they set things up, when they did have the opportunities a few years ago, they made moves both in the middle of the season and in the off season to set themselves up and have a chance to go out and win. They had the guy, Brendan Finnegan, the pitcher from TCU in 2014 when the Kansas City went to the World Series the first time. He was the first guy to ever pitch in the College World Series and in the World Series in the same year, and they traded him. He was a really talented kid. They traded him for the opportunity to get better, and it paid off, and they were able to win a World Series the next year. And if you're Minnesota, you're kind of in that same thing. You can't just be thinking about, well, we need to hedge our bets and try to play for a few years down the line, because how many times has Minnesota been legitimately good since winning the World Series in 1991? Not mm-hmm. very many. I think they've got to be more aggressive and go out and make it some deals.
The Homer Hankies era in the Baggy Dome.
Yeah, that's
those
right.
Days.
That's exactly,
you know,
right.
I have to say this real quick. Now, this isn't everything, because I still think the Brewers have some things to trade in their system that will get them a good player. But Baseball America updated their top 100 prospects in minor league baseball today. And every team in Major League Baseball had at least one player in the top 100. But six teams only had one player in the top 100.
Really? Well, it sounds like we're having some connection issues with Darren Pritchett. He's up in Wisconsin with the South Bend Cubs. They are taking on the Wisconsin Timber Rattlers with first pitch at 8 o'clock tonight, Eastern time. And I'm Sean Steyers at Notre Dame Stadium, broadcasting Budweiser's weekday sports beat on 96.1 WSBT. Of course, I'm at Notre Dame Stadium in July because we have a soccer friendly going on tonight. It is Liverpool FC, the defending UEFA League champions, taking on Borussia Dortmund. So that is coming up. We will not be broadcasting that game, but we are broadcasting Budweiser's weekday sports beat for another 30 minutes here at Notre Dame Stadium. And we've had some connection issues with Darren Pritchett in Wisconsin in just the last couple of minutes. So Jerry Janowski, our studio engineer, is going to keep efforting and see if we can get a strong connection with him from his broadcast position in Wisconsin. And in the meantime, I will just finish. I was doing my American League power rankings, and I will finish my power rankings as we get closer to getting Darren back. So the top six in the American League remain unchanged in my power rankings this week. I had the Cleveland Indians at number six. They are currently occupying the top spot in the American League wildcard race. The Oakland A's are at number five with the Tampa Bay Rays at number four, and those two teams are tied for the number two wildcard spot in the American League. At number three in the American League power rankings this week, the Minnesota Twins, who lead the Cleveland Indians by four games in the American League Central. And that takes us to number two, where I have the Houston Astros. The Astros are not happy after finishing their four-game series in Anaheim last night to return home to start a series with the Rangers. They finished late last night and then got home at 5:15 a.m. this morning And I guess we wonder why guys use uppers and PEDs and all that stuff in baseball. So they finished at 5:15 this morning. They've got a night game tonight as they host the Rangers. Their 61 wins for the Houston Astros are the third most in baseball, even after splitting their last eight games with Texas and Anaheim. Pitching has been a big part of their success, but they're in the market for a starting pitcher as well, as it seems is most of baseball right now, because it's a seller's market when it comes to starting pitchers in the trade deadline 12 days away. So the Houston Astros at number two in the power rankings, and it sounds like we have Darren Pritchett back in Wisconsin. Are you there, Mr. Pritchett?
I hope.
Yeah, that's right. Glad to have you back. So I've got the Astros at number two in the power rankings.
So number one's got to be the guys from New York.
That is right. The Yankees closing in on the Dodgers for the best record in baseball. L.A. has 64 wins. The Yankees have 62. The Dodgers plus 151 run differential, tops in baseball. The Yankees plus 130 is second. They took three of their last four games with Tampa Bay after winning two of three over Toronto. If they're going to be tested at all, I think, over the second half, I think it's going to be here in the next 2 weeks. Here's what the schedule looks like for them. They're hosting three games with Colorado this weekend, then three in Minnesota, four games at Boston, two at home with the Diamondbacks, which is just 1.5 back in the National League wild card race, and then four more games at home against Boston. So that is 16 consecutive games the Yankees have coming up against current playoff contenders.
I feel really bad for them.
I know,
as a
right?
A team that's blowing away the luxury tax. They don't care to spend all the money they want to build that superpower team. I feel really bad they got to play all those teams with a winning record.
I do, too. Just feel horrible for the Yankees.
I mean, they like to get Syndergaard or Bumgarner or someone like that. Gee whiz, unbelievable. Pretty incredible. It'd be weird to be a Yankee fan because the expectation every year is to win the championship and nothing else works. I guess
that's
it's
exactly
like being
right.
A Notre Dame football coach.
It is. It's all or nothing every year. If you're Notre Dame, the Yankees, I don't know about some of the other teams. Those are the two standard bearers right now in those two sports, though. For that.
All right,
that
so angle. Sean's power rankings for the America League, 1-6, Yankees, Astros, Twins, Rays, A's, and Indians. It is now 6:32 at WSBT. We might as well roll right into rapid fire here as we continue on. Sean, live at Notre Dame Stadium. The friendly between Dortmund and Liverpool coming up at 8 o'clock. And we have South Bend Cubs baseball from Wisconsin tonight at 8:05. I'm Darren Pritchett handling that. So let's just kind of weave into rapid fire. And as we start rapid fire, if you don't mind, Sean, just for people that are just joining us, maybe they're in their car driving to Notre Dame Stadium, you got some information about the Liverpool team at the top of this hour that it will not be a full squad tonight.
Yeah, Liverpool is without its top three forwards for tonight's match, as well as its starting goalie. So they are without four of their top players on the roster because those players are playing in some different events, apparently, internationally. So they will not be here tonight. Three forwards and the starting goalie. Not sure what that means in terms of if they'll be back when Liverpool plays in Boston this weekend at Fenway Park, or next week when they go to Yankee Stadium to play. But those four players, three forwards and a goalie, not here tonight.
All right, that's the update on Liverpool and Dortmund. Now I'll let you take over with rapid fire.
All right, Darren, let's since I'm at Notre Dame Stadium, let's talk some Notre Dame football. Scale of 1 to 10, what is your level of concern with Notre Dame having to replace Dexter Williams at running back this season?
Well, I look at that in two different ways. Number one, Jafar Armstrong is a good starter, but I'm really concerned about the depth at the running back position. We need to see some of these guys on the field before we have full evaluations. But anytime you don't have people with experience, it makes you a little nervous. So, I mean, in today's football, you really need two outstanding running backs.
Yeah.
So I would say, with that being said, I'm going to put my number at a 5.
Okay. I'm going to be lower than that. I'm going to put it at, I think, a 3, because here's what I look at. Tony Jones Jr. ran for 392 yards, 3 touchdowns last year. Jafar Armstrong, 383, 7 touchdowns, averaged 5.3 yards a carry. So just looking at those numbers alone, they don't look great, but the two guys combined for 775 yards, and the bulk of that, 508 yards they combined to rush for in the 4 games before Dexter Williams came back for the injury. So for that reason, what the thing that I have the biggest concern about right now is, can they have that home run threat, the breakaway kind of guy that Dexter Williams was able to be for him last year and that Josh Adams was able to be the year before? Can one of these guys give them that kind of home run threat? I think Jafar Armstrong has the potential to be there. So that's the biggest concern for me. But I think, as you touched on, the tandem, I think in tandem, these guys can give them a consistent running game. So I am not overly concerned in terms of the whole. The biggest concern that I have specific would be, can one of them turn into the home run threat that Dexter Williams was last year? So I don't have a huge level of concern because of the fact that they were able to be really productive in those first 4 games while Dexter Williams was serving his suspension.
It's the biggest concern on the offensive side of the football.
That's valid. That's
in my
valid
opinion.
Yeah. It's valid, but I'm not overly concerned. And you're not totally concerned with it since you're at a 5. So, but I do agree. It's the biggest concern they have on that side. All right, Clemson offensive lineman John Simpson said at ACC Media Days this week that it is Notre Dame, not Alabama, that was the best team Clemson played last season. And then, of course, the mouth of the South, Paul Feinbaum, had to chime in saying he's not a fan of Simpson saying that. So, Darren, what do you think of the whole thing?
Well, he has a right to say whatever he wants.
Exactly.
I don't know what the question was that led to the answer, so that would probably alter my answer a little bit. But if he was asked which was the more difficult opponent, and if he truly believes it's Notre Dame, I don't have any problem with him saying that. If he would have said it's Alabama, I would have had no problem with him saying that. So Media Day, I mean, it's not like it's bulletin board material. It's not like he was calling Alabama an awful program or anything.
Yeah.
He just gave his honest opinion that it sounds like he thought Notre Dame was a better opponent than Alabama. Now, who knows? He could have looked at it from the people he was going against personally. Maybe he was looking at it from a team standpoint. I don't know. There's a lot of loose ends here. But at the end of the day, he gave us an opinion on who's the better opponent. He gave it, so I don't have any reason why anybody would be overly excited about something that really doesn't matter and affect anything about the college football season that's right around the corner.
Yeah,
except for SEC football shows that need something to complain about.
There you go, because, of course, you can't criticize anyone in the SEC, especially the godfather, Nick Saban in Alabama, right? But apparently, I just saw this today. I'd heard this kind of headline over the last couple of days about Simpson. Apparently, Alabama linebacker Dylan Moses had made the comment that Georgia was the toughest team Alabama played last year. So Moses says it was Georgia, not Clemson, who beat them by 28 points that was the toughest team that they played. And so I don't know if Simpson was asked specifically about Moses's comments, but then Simpson said, well, it was Notre Dame, not Alabama, that was the toughest team we played. But Simpson's comments got Feinbaum to say, I'm not in the business of criticizing college players, but that's easily one of the stupidest comments I've ever heard. But because, again, of course, you're not allowed to criticize the moneymaker in the SEC, Alabama, and that's where Feinbaum makes his money, is the SEC. And so, for me, it's easy to say, oh, well, Alabama would have destroyed Notre Dame, which Feinbaum went on to say, but Feinbaum had Alabama beating Clemson for the national championship. So what difference does it make what he thinks? I mean, we can all say that Alabama would have done this to Notre Dame. What we know is Clemson beat Notre Dame by 27 points. They beat Alabama by 28 points. And Simpson, the guy who said this for Clemson, was on the field against both teams. So if he wants to say Notre Dame was the better team, I would put more stock in that than what Paul Feinbaum has to say about it.
It's pretty simple for Paul. if you're going to be in the business of not criticizing student athletes,
then don't
criticize student
exactly
athletes.
Right.
Don't say, well, normally I don't do this. No, then stay consistent.
You did it.
Don't criticize them, so you broke your own rule. So I also believe to be overly personal and critical of college athletes, we have to be careful as media members. If they are pro athletes, I think it is a totally different conversation. That is
right.
Their way of life. But I think we in the media for college athletics, I think we can say this player is not playing well, but you can do it in a way where you do not bash them. And I don't believe in bashing college athletes. I just don't think that's the way to go. But in the pro game, I have really no issues with that. But again, Paul, don't say, well, normally I don't or I don't like to. Then don't.
Yeah.
Then don't do it.
Just don't.
Because it's not really that big of a deal in the whole scheme of things. Who cares what this guy said? It doesn't matter. Control the controllables.
That's exactly right. All right. Do we have time for any more? I know we've got to get into an interview with the Liverpool CEO here in a minute.
That's a great question. I don't know.
Do you want to go ahead?
Let's do one more.
You want to do one more?
Let's do one more.
I don't get the chance to ask you a lot of hockey questions, so I'm going to ask you a hockey question right now. Fair or foul? St. Louis Blues player Robbie Fabbri letting his dog eat spaghetti and meatballs out of the Stanley Cup.
Fair. Anything goes with a cup. When you have it for a day, it's yours. So anything goes with that old Stanley Cup. They clean it up after each player has it. And that individual, Mr. Pritchard, goes wherever the cup goes. So absolutely, he's got everything he needs to clean or fix the Stanley Cup. So I am absolutely okay with a dog eating his dinner out of the Stanley Cup.
I agree. And I again, you know, it's social media, so maybe I should take it with a grain of salt.
Who's saying it's an issue?
There have been people bashing this guy for letting the dog eat spaghetti and meatballs out of the cup. But then as I go and do a little research, I mean, Mario Lemieux took it into a swimming pool once, right? And then I read where there have been other players who set their babies in it, and apparently their babies made a mess of their diapers while they were sitting in the Stanley Cup. So how is a dog eating spaghetti and meatballs any worse than that? So I don't get what the uproar is. So that's why I wanted to ask you, because you're more tuned into hockey etiquette than I am, so I wanted to get your opinion on it.
Legend has it a former Notre Dame player who won the cup might have injured Stanley at one point.
Oh boy.
I don't even know what that means.
Factual.
Well, Stanley had to be kind of put back together like Humpty Dumpty. So.
Oh boy.
But
oh,
I don't
boy.
Know if the story's true. I've just heard about it.
Okay.
That's Rapid Fire coming up next. You'll hear from Liverpool CEO Peter Moore as he talks about Liverpool and Dortmund meeting at Notre Dame Stadium tonight. The friendly is on the way in about an hour and 17 minutes. We're back with more Sports Beat next on WSBT.
Budweiser's weekday Sports Beat continues on 96.1 WSBT. The sports leader, I'm Sean Steyers at Notre Dame Stadium as we get set for Liverpool FC against Borussia Dortmund here tonight, the first ever soccer-friendly soccer match of any kind at Notre Dame Stadium. Earlier this week, I talked to Liverpool CEO Peter Moore about tonight's matchup and what's going on with the Liverpool tour here in the States, and we'll let you hear that right now.
Right now, we're very glad to be joined by the CEO of the Liverpool Football Club, Peter Moore. Welcome to town, Peter. You just got into town earlier today.
Yep, just landed at South Bend International a few hours ago, Sean, and delighted to be here.
Glad to have you. And, of course, we're all looking forward to the friendly coming up this Friday at Notre Dame Stadium. We've more or less been building up to this for a few months now. So how exciting is it for you and Liverpool FC that the Notre Dame Stadium friendly is now practically upon us?
Well, it's incredible. And as you may know, we come here as champions of Europe, having beaten Tottenham Hotspur in Madrid on June 1st to become the six-time Champions League champions, and we proudly bring the trophy here to South Bend, and absolutely delighted we can play in front of what I hope is going to be a really big crowd on Friday night against Borussia Dortmund. And special linkage there. Our manager, Jurgen Klopp, is the former manager of Borussia Dortmund. So a lot of linkages here, but I think most proud that we can come to South Bend, come to this historic stadium, such great history, obviously, here at Notre Dame, and be the first ever soccer match to play on the hallowed turf there in the stadium.
So now, with you getting into town, this is Tuesday, and I know there's going to be some stuff going on Thursday and then the match on Friday, but what do these next few days look like for you and the club then as you prepare for Friday night's action?
Well, there's a number of things. Not only the men's team here, but we're the first Premier League team to take its women's team on full tour with them internationally, and so the women's team are here. They're also training. This is primarily focused on getting ready for the season, which starts on August 9th, so any preseason tour of this nature has a real focus on training, and in fact, the players left and they've got a light training session just to keep them kind of on their toes a little bit after a long flight from England earlier today. Same with the women. They're out training this evening at the superb facilities we have here at Notre Dame, and delighted that we can enjoy it for the next few days. So a lot of prep, Sean, a lot of training, a lot of community work, and a lot of engagement with fans locally and from across the Midwest who are going to be coming in over the next few days. And gathering, obviously, for the game on Friday evening.
We are talking with Peter Moore, the CEO of Liverpool Football Club, with the friendly coming up this Friday at Notre Dame Stadium, 8 o'clock. Tickets, you can get them right now, gameday.nd.edu, as well as Ticketmaster. Peter, this is the first of three friendlies that you'll have playing in iconic venues here in the States this month. You're going to be in Boston at Fenway Park this weekend, and then Yankee Stadium next week. How did this idea for a tour like this in these venues, how did it come about?
Well, the idea of playing in three historic venues, obviously, was something that was important to us. And I should point out, full disclosure, we're owned by Fenway Sports Group, who own both the Boston Red Sox and Liverpool Football Club. So we're kind of going home a little bit on the weekend to play at Fenway. And it's always great to see a baseball stadium and such an iconic stadium as Fenway turned into, for a couple of days, a soccer stadium. And we have a massive fan base in both of those major cities. And so it's very important to us when we can to get over here, to give back to our fans. And the best way to do that is to play right in their hometown. But the idea, you're exactly right, of let's not just go and play in any old soccer stadium. There's plenty of them here in the United States now, but let's look at iconic venues and let's make a real statement and let's give back to the incredible support we get here in the United States. We have 49 official supporters clubs across the 50 states. And we're absolutely delighted we can come here as part of our preseason preparations and for the players to meet the fans and for the fans to interact with the players. And that's another thing we do on tour is give plenty of opportunity for the fans to interact. Things like open training, some of the community stuff we'll be doing here in South Bend as well is important to us. And as I say, the women's team are here as well, and they're going to be playing this week as well. So we're absolutely delighted to be here. On force, we arrived with a 747 here into South Bend, completely full 747 of the players, the coaching staff, and couldn't be happier to be here.
And that was fairly historic as well, the first 747 international flight to land in South Bend. So that was kind of cool when you guys...
We found out that the runway is long enough.
Yeah, that's right. That's good news. Very good news.
That is good news.
You have an interesting background, Peter. You've been with Liverpool FC for just a couple of years, but before that, you were with EA Sports, the video game company, of course, for 10 years. So what sparked your interest to go from video games and into actually running a professional sports franchise?
Well, despite my accent, I was born in Liverpool. my dad was a Liverpool fan. My granddad was a Liverpool fan. I'm obviously a Liverpool fan, and the opportunity after a phenomenal career, mostly here in the United States in video games, but prior to that in sports marketing with Reebok, in particular in Boston in the 90s. And when the opportunity arose to come back and give a little bit of value, I hope, back to my football club that's given me so much over my lifetime, And to move back to Liverpool, I'd been gone from the UK for 38 years. It was obviously too great an opportunity to give up. And I've come back. I've been in 2 years. It's been a great 2 years, culminating, as I mentioned earlier, with winning the Champions League in a dramatic season this year, beating teams like Barcelona and Bayern Munich and Paris Saint-Germain. But, you know, I wish everybody has the opportunity that I have had to give back to their team that has given them so much, and that's what I'm doing right now as chief executive.
He's Peter Moore, the CEO of the Liverpool Football Club. And, Peter, one area that I saw from your background is with technology, and something that you've done since joining the Liverpool Football Club, revamping the fan engagement strategy there. So can you give us an idea of some things you've been able to implement along the technological lines to better engage with fans?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we're a massive global football club and a massive global sports brand. We believe that independent research would indicate, Sean, that we've got about 700 million fans around the world that follow Liverpool, that are in Asia and Scandinavia, in Europe, obviously, South America, and here in the United States. And so to engage with those fans in a meaningful way requires technology. And one of the things since I've arrived at Liverpool is accelerate our outreach, our engagement, generating content, things like, you know, web applications, mobile applications, databases that add greater value to the fans' experience. I was Exhibit A, if you will, living in San Francisco as I did, and thirsting for information and content and news, and sometimes was difficult to get. And mm-hmm. We, as a club, have invested heavily in building out network infrastructure so that we can add greater value to our fans who desperately want to interact and engage with our football club, but necessarily you can't do that in person. Difficult to get to Liverpool and get a ticket every weekend, and very difficult for the team to fly around the world all the time to play friendly games like we're playing this weekend. So the bridge to that is technology, and the bridge to that is utilization of the internet in meaningful ways so that we've got 24/7 content, news, information flowing through. And, you know, we believe in social media. We're one of the most followed sports brands in the world on social media. And we have a very powerful television network, LFC TV, that broadcasts around the world 24/7 content. So being able to bring a little bit of my experience of the digital transformation of the video game industry, if you will, away from physical media. You remember cartridges and discs in your Xbox and PlayStation, Sean, and now a great majority of gamers download and interact with their games via the internet, interact with each other via the internet. And traditional sports is going the same way. It needs to go the same way. You know, we're under pressure from, ironically, things like video games for people's attention. And I think it's very important. As a football club that's got a global fan base, we find ways of interacting, engaging with those fans effectively.
And I imagine just that space has changed quite a bit just even in the last 5 years.
Yeah. I think football clubs, you know, in particular what we see in England here, have realized the global nature of their fan base. It's a high-stakes game now, Sean. You know, players are expensive. Mm-hmm. Being successful is expensive. And so driving engagement also helps drive revenues. And so engaging with our fans around the world in ways that are meaningful. They want to give back. We want to be able to get the best players, no different than American sports. Having a global engagement strategy and being able to interact with our fans around the world, as well as locally. But, you know, when I think about when I've traveled the world in the last 2 years, as you point out, it's stunning to me how many Liverpool fans there are in every nook and cranny of this globe.
Wow.
And it's our job and it's our responsibility to add back to their experience through technology, and that's exactly what we're doing.
Before we let you go, Peter, what's something fans here in and around South Bend must know, need to know about Liverpool FC versus Borussia Dortmund, the friendly this Friday night at Notre Dame Stadium?
You've got the rarity, Sean, of two clubs who both have the same anthem. And you've got an English club, obviously, and ourselves, and you've got a German club in Borussia Dortmund, and we both sing You'll Never Walk Alone. And one of the things when these two clubs do get together, it's quite the opening. It's typically before the kickoff of the game. You'll Never Walk Alone is a Broadway show tune. You may or may not be familiar with it, from Rodgers and Hammerstein, Carousel, way before you were born, Sean.
Sure.
Was made famous in more modern times by a Liverpool band called Jerry and the Pacemakers. Okay. And in the early 60s, it hit number one in the charts. And our fans have sung it ever since as part of the ritual of the game. And a number of clubs around the world have been so taken with that, they've also adopted it as their own. Borussia Dortmund is one of those. So when you come along, when everybody comes along to the game on Friday night, they'll be able to join in with You'll Never Walk Alone just before the kickoff.
Peter Moore, CEO of the Liverpool Football Club, welcome to South Bend, and good luck. We look forward to seeing you out there Friday night.
Thank you, Sean. Thank you for everybody having us, giving us such a warm welcome here, and we look forward to Friday night ourselves. It's going to be a great match.
All right, Sean, that was your interview with Peter Moore, and you're all ready to watch a little friendly over at Notre Dame Stadium.
Yeah.
So the fans starting to file in. Do you see a lot of red for the Liverpool lads?
There is a lot of red. I see just a few. I see a few yellow shirts for the Dortmund crowd. But, yeah, there is a lot of red in the stadium. Dortmund is actually out on the field. They're not really doing anything. They're kind of standing around right now while some people keep hosing down the water. But a lot of people filing in, and it has got to be hot out there right now.
They're not practicing their diving yet?
No diving practice. I will say this, the circle that is in the middle of the field, the shadows from the west press box are covering that circle. So the field is about two-thirds covered in shadow. So maybe in another hour when the match starts, the whole thing will be in the shade.
Sports Beat brought to you by the Food Bank of Northern Indiana. Hunger is a story we can end. Find out how at feedindiana.org. And Budweiser, great teams are waiting. Grab some Buds. He has been Sean Stiers from Notre Dame Stadium. I'm Darren from Appleton, Wisconsin. Cubs baseball tonight at 7:50 on WSBT. Sean, enjoy your weekend.
All right, have a good one tonight and a good weekend.
Thank you. You too. Top of the hour, WSBT South Bend.